Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Here go.
Let it bump. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am Dan Favalli, coming at you this time without my awesome co-host, Andy Bailey. He is tending to his newborn son, Benjamin, so we would all like to congratulate on that happening, and we're going to forgive him if he's MIA over the next few podcasts or just making inconsistent appearances. I think it's a viable excuse. I haven't decided yet. I'll probably poll people to make sure he's not screwing me over, but since he's not here, that means that I was able to call in Grant Hughes of Bleacher Report, national NBA featured columnist for them. He's also a lawyer, so just keep that in mind if you ever need some legal troubles. And be sure to follow him on Twitter, where our crusade, and I don't really think it was our crusade, but people might have just started seeing his tweets, at @GT_Hughes, spelled exactly like it sounds, he has over 1,000 Twitter followers. It is still disgustingly low. That number should probably be at least at 10K plus. I don't know how many followers earns us respect anymore, Grant, but I would think you deserve at least 10,000 Twitter followers.
I'm prepared to purchase some, I think, just to get over that 10K. I'm not above that. Who's to say I didn't purchase like the 25 that I needed to get over 1,000?
I mean, I'm actually kind of triggered right now because I paid for 25 and I have less than 5, so it's like that was a wasted investment.
We'll have regrets.
So the trade deadline just passed. We're recording this tonight. You actually came on a whim, which I super appreciate. So let's all just give a round of applause for Grant's flexibility. And I know he was super busy today, like the rest of the NBA world. So we're super excited to have him. Oh, and really quick, just let me remind you guys to please rate, subscribe, and review us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. We are so close to the century mark in ratings, so if you could just help us get over that hump, and then we're going to continue to keep asking to give us ratings, but let's just get to the century mark so I can throw hypothetical confetti. It takes 10 to 15 seconds of your day. Hardwood Knox on iTunes, and we will love you forever. With that said, we get to move on to the trade deadline, Grant, and it was for Woj tweeting earlier in the morning that it would be that teams were pulling out and it would be a rather quiet trade deadline. I understand there was a lack of blockbusters, but there was just, it seemed like between 12 and the 3 p.m. deadline, just this flurry of deals. Many of them consequential because they involved the Cavs, a lot of different flyers taken. I know you had kind of said there were some surprises, like I don't think many of us expected the Clippers to deal DeAndre Jordan, especially after that Lou Williams extension. I was very surprised Tyreke Evans wasn't moved, but I want to start with just your general impressions of the deadline. You kind of teased that you had some macro takes on what was happening before we hopped on, and I'm excited to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're like sort of half-formed macro takes, but it was strange to me that it really seems like, so just as a preface, the only first rounder that moved at the deadline, to be specific, was Cleveland's in that big trade with the Lakers. And, you know, it seemed to me like there were a whole bunch of really, maybe obvious isn't the right word, but sort of foreseeable trade candidates, like Tyreke Evans is one, DeAndre Jordan's another. It's a little different, but there were several guys whose names had just been out there forever that seemed so logical to be moved. Like, what is Evans doing in Memphis? Why do they want him? That, you know, they don't have his bird rights. They're going to have to potentially pay him with an exception or whatever this offseason if they keep him. So get a first and get out of there. And it seems like teams just decided across the board, other than Cleveland, who was like uniquely desperate, that we're just not trading firsts anymore. That's just not a thing that's going to happen. And especially not for rentals, which is really weird because that definitely didn't used to be how things worked. You could always get a first from, you know, Washington would always trade its first, it seemed like. And granted, that's a team that would do it because they were, you know, pursuing a playoff spot or playoff position and wanted to add somebody. But, you know, just I think just to be specific, I think that the Wizards last year got Bojan Bogdanović for their first. Is that right? I think that's right.
Yep, that is correct.
Are you telling me? So what that says to me is that the valuation of rentals has so changed that Tyreke Evans, having a really quietly awesome season, is now not worth that? it's really strange to me. And I think it reflects the fact that a lot of these teams are seeing that a lot of money got spent up a year ago and 2 years ago with the cap spike, and nobody has money anymore. And these firsts are extremely valuable, more so than ever, because they're cost control picks and they're just not things that are going to be traded. And restricted guys too, I think Rodney Hood being an exception, maybe they're more valuable because like Aaron Gordon didn't go anywhere and his name came up just a little bit. And I think teams are banking on the fact that a lot of money is not going to be out there for huge offer sheets. That's another kind of macro thing. And so I think teams are expecting to keep their restricted guys for a little cheaper than would have been possible in the past. So kind of a couple non-specific half-baked ideas, but it really seemed like this deadline was different in a couple of key ways.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think on all those fronts, the Tyreek Evans specifically not having his bird rights transferred killed his value because you either needed to have cap space or you would have to use probably even in this market all of your mid-level exception, maybe. So
maybe.
And the Grizzlies might just look at it and say, hey, you look at what they got for James Ennis, which just basically, to me, I thought that because he was coming with early bird rights, no, he wouldn't get you a first-round pick. But to end up with a second-rounder and Bryce Johnson, that was just a sign of the market. And the other thing that I think we have to consider is a lot of the teams that would normally have done these types of things. So like, let's use the Wizards. Last year, it might've been easier for them to rent Bojan Bogdanovic or make that trade with the first round pick because they had his bird rights. They ended up not keeping him anyway, so it doesn't matter. Right. Yet a lot of these teams that would traditionally be buyers, they were also self-inflicted victims of that 2016 spending spree. Like you look at the Portland Trailblazers probably would have wanted to make a move, but instead they were left ducking the luxury tax by moving Noah Vonleh, because why pay the luxury tax for a team that's going to top out as maybe a five seed? Like maybe.
Right.
And even like across the board, the Knicks are not going to give up, or at least shouldn't give up, future assets because they're not a playoff team in large part because they've misspent their money. And that to me would have to factor into it as well. And if you're looking at it from the Grizzlies' perspective, they have more than $100 million in guaranteed salary on the books for next year. And assuming they guarantee the contracts of Wayne Selden and Andrew Harrison, that's going to climb closer to $105 million. And yes, they can be under the luxury tax, but if it's going to cost your entire non-taxpayer mid-level to keep Tyreek Evans, you've burned through this tool, your only tool really, or means to improve the team on one guy. And I get he's been spectacular. His scoring out of the pick and roll has been insane. Looking at what he's been able to do in one-on-one situations, he'll give you a little bit of switching too on defense if he doesn't have to guard the top guys. But that's just irresponsible to me. And maybe the market was so low that they'd rather chance that. And then you look at him and say, hey, next February, maybe that's when we get the first round pick. It certainly seems the Clippers did that with Lou Williams. I'm interested to see whether this changes perhaps after next year, but more so the summer after, when we're talking about the 2019-2020 season and a lot of these contracts are about to come off the books or they're expiring.
Yeah, so you had the Grizzlies. I don't know if you didn't necessarily assign winners and losers in your grades piece today, which is, by the way, thorough and very, very good and incredibly produced given the time constraints. But you're down on the Grizzlies. Is that more because you like James Ennis and didn't want to see him move for what he ended up going for, or is it the Evans thing? And before you get to that, this is a thing we're going to talk about when we get to some of the Lakers-Cleveland analysis. But like you said, Evans has been awesome. But like every other year of his career also counts in what you view him as. And so if you're just betting on what Evans is going to do for you next year as Memphis, assuming you're going to re-sign him, I think the odds are that he's going to be old Tyreek Evans as opposed to this one, mm-hmm. right? If you just say that, well, those 7 or 8 other years, like those count the same, don't they? I mean, he's still injury prone. You don't ever just stop being that way. And he's, you know, if he's not on a contract year next year, well, what does that get you? But so with Memphis, is it really more Evans, or is it a package thing, or is your being down on them a bigger in terms of like they just don't know where they are and they're, you know, give me the how are you apportioning your sentiment on Memphis kind of botching this?
Oh, I love the word apportioning. I actually tweeted out the word apportion during the Super Bowl when Ram used Martin Luther King to sell trucks, and my mentions were a tire fire because of the word apportion. For me, it's an inconsistent message because you move James Ennis, who you had early bird rights on, and it would have been easier to keep, but don't move Tyreek Evans, you don't have bird rights on. And if you're going the route of, hey, we're going to keep Tyreek Evans, then you should go the route of, we're going to keep James Ennis too, since we're trying to build this winner. I get, in a sense, what they're doing by not having – I mean, shopping Mike Conley would have been impossible now because of his Achilles injury, and that – I mean, he's owed so much money over the next 4 years or next 3 years after this one. And you have him if he's healthy, and you have Marc Gasol, and if you get just some nice contributions from some of these other guys, like Wayne Seldon's intriguing, Jarrell Martin has shown flashes this year, you can talk yourself into, with the top, let's say, 5 or 7 pick you're going to get – going right into playoff contention. If that's your goal, then why are you hedging or like splitting? You know, like if you were going to keep Tyreek Evans, why did you sell so low on James Ennis? Unless you're just super low on him, except you had his early bird rights, and why not then just keep both of them?
Yeah.
So I think that's more the problem for me, is that it just reeks of an inconsistent direction.
I think one of the ways, so an approach like that either means that you are run as an organization incredibly well, meaning like you're trying to do it both ways. Like Houston never bottomed out, right? And they tried to play it both ways. Houston never bottomed out, and now they're awesome. You know, Dallas is kind of less successfully executed that, but I think most people would say they're pretty well run. Or it indicates you just have no idea what your plans are. Like, this is vintage Sacramento behavior, and I think the Grizzlies are kind of in that same spot now. I agree with you. That's kind of why I was like prodding you to get there. Inconsistency in your like overall approach to team building, or just this idea of trying to sort of do two things at once, just almost never works unless you're run by you're one of the best run teams in the league, which I think Memphis certainly is not. And now we have talked way too much about the Grizzlies. Where do you want to go next on this one? Do you want to go into Cavs Lakers and all the Cavs overhaul, or are we there yet?
Yeah, I think we have to go there. Yeah. I think with the Cavs, so they made the three separate deals by
Let's talk about them separately
first. Oh, you want to talk about them separately?
Yeah, let's talk about them each as a separately, and then let's kind of look at what, you know, how Cleveland got better.
Okay.
What are the Lakers trade particulars?
Yeah,
because I have different opinions on these different trades. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, so we'll go chronologically. We'll start that Lakers trade, and just as the breakdown, the Cavs received Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr., and they gave the Lakers their own 2018 first round pick, Channing Frye and Isaiah Thomas. So two expirings and a first round pick. I almost, looking back, I gave them a B- on this deal, and I almost feel like I was too, it's easier to look at, we're going to get to the other deals and kind of like it, and like looking at everything in the aggregate, but what you essentially did is help the Lakers clear cap space so that they can pitch LeBron James in free agency.
Now, right.
The idea that's been pointed out by some is if the Lakers want LeBron James, or LeBron James wants the Lakers, they would have figured out a way to get it done anyway, but it's just, within the last year, they've traded Kyrie Irving to their biggest Eastern Conference rival, who might now be the Eastern Conference favorite in large part because of Kyrie Irving, and now you're helping the Lakers get out from under a contract that a lot of people thought they were going to have to attach sweeteners to or just outright dump, and yet they got a first-round pick for it. So, like, that's wild to me.
That aspect of it, that it took a pick to get Clarkson's bad contract. I mean, if anything, I would have thought that a pick was going the other way, just because the Lakers' entire goal, their entire existence, is just devoted to clearing two max spots, and everyone in the league knows it. So you have to think that if you're negotiating with them and you're talking about a deal that potentially gets them to the amount of space they need for these two max slots, they have to do a couple other things. Depends on how they deal with Randall, depends on what they do with Luol Deng, but they're there if they want to be now. That you would just hold their feet to the fire and certainly not give a first to let it happen, because you know this is all the Lakers want. They're super motivated to do this. It's baffling to me. And to me, the only way this deal makes sense, I think you were generous with Cleveland on this, giving them a B-. But I think that's justifiable if, in fact, Thomas's presence there was just like so toxic that it was worth anything to get him out of there, which I kind of can buy. I kind of can buy that he was a huge part of the problem in Cleveland. But I think the Cavs, I don't think Jordan Clarkson is any good. I think Nance is fine. But I think if you split the trade apart, like, I don't know if Nance is worth the pick, if you want to look at it that way, and you went Fry and Thomas for Clarkson and Nance was, Nance would cost you the pick. I don't know if I even like that. But I think the only way you can justify this is to sort of take it off paper and say that, like, Thomas just had to go when we were willing to do anything to get rid of him, because it's just, he was the biggest destructive force in the locker room. And maybe that's harsh, but, like, I don't know. I could see that being the case.
It's tough because I think Nance, there's a chance that he might be worth it as the, if you were going to send that pick and those two expiring contracts, it's just, you were helping the Lakers clear cap space, and Nance is good, like, in his small burst role.
Yeah.
He's one of, like, right now he's clearing 10 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 assists per 36 minutes. Only 16 other players have done that throughout NBA history. And their names, like Charles Barkley, George McGinnis did it a bunch of times, Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson. So he's impressive, and he makes them switchier in the front court. Just giving up the pick was weird to me. And you do have to look at it. And this is, I know some people will brush back on this, but Jordan Clarkson, who's going to make $12.5 million next season and then $13.4 million in the final year of his contract, like, he's not an asset at 2 years and $25.9 million.
Oh, no way. Not even. I don't know who's going to disagree with that.
And Larry Nance Jr. is going to, he's extension eligible. He's obviously not going to get one this summer. He's entering restricted free agency in 2019. So even if you lose LeBron, like, this roster has all of a sudden gotten to a weird point where it could still be super, and this steps on the toes of some of the other deals they made, but it's gotten to a point where it could be super expensive with or without him.
Absolutely.
And that's what's tough to reconcile. If Nance ends up being this huge difference maker for them, because he can guard, I would say, 4 of the 5 positions on the court right now and do it semi-effectively, you throw him at the 5 and you just surround him with LeBron and the wings, and I'm just not going to mention their names to tease the next discussions, like, that could be, it's not a Warriors-proof lineup, but it just gives you hope against the Celtics or the Rockets or even the Warriors. Like, it gives you that chance to assume a different identity that you haven't been able to. Jay Crowder was supposed to help you do that, and he really didn't. That being said, it is a problem, and it was a problem before him, that some of your most versatile lineups, maybe some of your most important lineups, aren't going to include Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson now. And maybe they will. Yeah. Thompson and Nance are interesting. It's like that's just an issue for me. And this deal alone by itself, my first impulsive reaction was to give them a C- for helping the Lakers get cap space. Like, they have, if they stretch Luol Deng, like, they're just there. They can do some weird, funky things. They have some non-guarantees on players that I would kind of like to just see them keep, or maybe they would get rid of Zubac without thinking, or Tyler Ennis they would just get rid of without thinking. They're going to be there and have 2 max slots, and I just think that's a little, it was unnecessary to help them do that while giving up a first-round pick at the very least.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have a lot else to add. I think we both agree that, and this is the other thing. So let's go to the next deal. It's weird that, like, the same Cleveland team pulled these two deals off, because I assume that you're with me in that. I mean, getting Hill and Hood for what Cleveland gave up was kind of remarkable, I thought. I mean, that to me was a really good return, especially if you don't care about taking on the long-term money, potentially, if money's not your issue, because what you're doing is trying to make LeBron happy and sort of flip this season around to the extent you can. I mean, just in terms of the talent infusion, it seems like Cleveland really won that deal in a big way.
Yeah, if you're completely out on Jay Crowder, then they won that deal.
That's the question, though, right?
I'm not there yet. I was too impressed with him. Even when he was kind of having a down year last year, like, I just liked him. And I'm interested to see what he does in Utah when, the systems between Quinn Snyder and Brad Stevens aren't identical, but there's more of an egalitarian approach in Utah, which there's not in Cleveland. It's just, hey, LeBron, like, go do this shit, and we're just gonna... So maybe he'll just fit in better there, and just being away from the scrutiny of that locker room, I think it will help him. That being said, and the other thing to factor in here too is Crowder at 2 years and $15.1 million is still a really good contract. Hood might run you 15.1 annually, even in this restricted free agent market. There's a chance he'll double the cost of Jay Crowder over the next 2 years. There's a chance that he could double the cost, and you have to factor that in. This being said, once you lost Kyrie Irving, you needed to get another shot creator alongside LeBron, and Isaiah Thomas was supposed to be it. He wasn't it, at least not while he was there, and now you don't have anyone to turn to, because Kevin Love in today's NBA, like, he's not a shot creator outside of the post. And if you look right now at Cleveland's effective field goal percentage by player on pull-ups, Hood coming in now has the fourth highest mark, and it's behind LeBron, and then Kevin Love and Kyle Korver, neither of whom you're going to ask in crunch time to go to a face-up. Kyle Korver, most of his pull-ups, I didn't check this, but I imagine they're just this one dribble stuff. And
gotta be, yeah. Yeah.
So you can remove those two from the equation. He's all of a sudden there. George Hill is right behind Hood, but the discrepancy on the accuracy is pretty substantial when you're looking at the effective field goal percentage. He's instantly Cleveland's second best shot creator, and to get him for what amounts in this deal to a torpedoing Jay Crowder, who just wasn't good, Derrick Rose, who's already been waived and is a terrible NBA player, and Amon Shumpert, who is always injured and fallen out of your rotation, and a second round pick for Miami. That even if it ends up in the early 30s, like, you'll live with it. You got these guys, and you're longer. What if George Hill starts defending like he did in Indiana, kind of like he did at points in Utah? That's going to be a big deal for you as well. You're longer and more versatile everywhere now. And the big thing for me, you didn't have to give up the Nets pick. And none of these names, when you look at them individually, were worth giving up the Nets pick for. But to accomplish what the Cavaliers did, when you remove the names and say this is what they have now, and to not give up the Nets pick while doing it, I do think that's a fairly big deal. And that's why I gave them a B+ for this trade. And I frankly did like it, especially if you're going to, you know, give Chetty more minutes. Then that's like they just have a lot of more versatility in general. And that's really what I loved about this deal.
You know how you pull off a deal that makes you look this good is you make sure the Kings are involved. That's how you do it.
Can we? Because, yeah, I know you're going to get into it. Please go.
I want to say one thing. Oh yeah, we'll get. I know for a fact we agree on the handling of George Hill and the Kings. But I just want to say that, you know, I think we're both also pretty in on George Hill, or at least the concept of George Hill. Like, I've always liked him. I love the idea of a. I guess he's a point guard, but sort of not really, because he's not going to break you down. But he can guard either backcourt spot. And this is, again, the idea of George Hill. He has not always been this. But just as lights out as a catch-and-shoot guy, guards any backcourt spot, takes care of the ball, is long, just all that stuff. Like, if the Cavs weren't going to get a Kyrie clone, like if they weren't going to go get Kemba Walker somehow, this is exactly the point guard you put alongside LeBron. I mean, it's like if you took Mario Chalmers and injected him with like what they gave Captain America. Like, that's what George Hill, the idea again of George Hill is. Like, he just makes open shots, he guards, he doesn't need to be a high usage guy. He just is what you need. And Hood is, you know, I like, he's a big guard that can score. We've belabored that enough, but I just think like that's exactly who Cleveland needed. Exactly. Even almost down to like Hill's personality. He's like such a low maintenance guy. Greg Popovich said he's like his favorite player he's ever coached. He's just totally anti what was populating Cleveland's locker room before. So I'm just blown away that they could do this. And again, as you said, this hinges on Jay Crowder, like this version of Jay Crowder. This needs to be who Jay Crowder is going forward. Otherwise, you know, then Cleveland has a problem, because Crowder was the guy that you theoretically were going to use to guard Kevin Durant or James Harden or whoever in a playoff series. And while Hood is a big guy on the wing, Cleveland, now it's LeBron. Now LeBron has to guard that guy, whoever it is. But if Crowder was never going to get back to there, then awesome. You got off a guy that just wasn't going to help you. But I still do. It's funny. I can talk myself into it from Utah's perspective too, because Crowder's cheap. He's been a proven rotation guy, a proven really good starter as recently as 2 years ago. So not bad from Utah either, but the Kings, I will let you start on the Kings, because I'm sure I am going to just keep going on them if I do it.
Yeah. I'm going to want to – I want to get back to Jay Crowder's fit in Utah at some point, and then we have stuff to wrap up with the Cavs. But I don't understand what the Kings did here. And you traded Malachi Richardson, who is in his second year – for nothing. You got Bruno Caboclo, who you ended up keeping, but you know you're not going to keep beyond this season. And yet you waived Yorgos Papayannis, and I'm looking at his pronunciation like phonetically, and it looks like it's Yorgos Papayannis on Basketball Reference. Is that wrong?
Call him Papa G. They call him Papa G in Sacramento. Call him that.
Big George. Papa G. You just – and this was – they spent like forever saying, oh, this is a good prospect. They drafted him number 13th in 2016. And now both these guys are gone for nothing – so that you could do what? Get Joe Johnson, who is immediately the biggest buyout candidate in the NBA, like Amon Shumpert's corpse, and a 2020 second-round pick for Miami. I understand what you're doing from the sense that you save about $8 million for next
season.
That's money you can use to swallow unwanted deals elsewhere in exchange for picks and cost-controlled prospects, but you should have done that last summer. You're late to that party. And this deal, I initially gave a B because I didn't realize that we were going to see these other deals. Why would you not, to salvage the situation, why was Vince Carter not bought out? Why was that not on the table?
It's baffling to me. The George Hill thing, it's so indicative of an organization that, like I've said a second ago, just can't decide how it wants to proceed. It wants to have it both ways. George Hill never should have signed George Hill. That money, we saw last summer that the cost of getting a first round pick was like Damari Carroll, right? Like that's what the Nets ate Damari Carroll's salary, got a first from Toronto. Okay, so what it costs? The Kings had more salary cap room than like almost anybody. And so that money should have been spent on taking on someone else's bad deal with a first, back when you could get a first, because you can't get a first anymore for anything. Instead, they signed George Hill, and that was a salvageable situation if you traded him and got a first or whatever, you know, get something. But instead, they play him. He has one of his worst years ever. I think his on-court net rating was like minus 12 something right now, now that he's gone. And so really you've turned him into a second, a 2020 second, and an $8 million savings. I think you could have better used the $18 million in cap space that you had that you spent on him over the summer. I just don't understand why he was ever on the team if this ultimately and getting rid of him, you concurrently got rid of two first-rounders in a recent draft. I just don't understand why any of these events took place. Like this is a series of things that unfolded that just never should have happened and do not happen with an organization that has any idea of what it wants to do.
I don't even have it. There's nothing like to add there.
That's my rant. Yeah. Rant concluded.
The Malachi Richard thing, but it's just to get rid of those young guys was just it just seems blasphemous by the Kings. The fact that they're in this situation in the first place, in hindsight, I understood. I tried to like really comprehend the whole having the veterans in the locker room. You didn't need that many. And like now Zach Randolph's just on the books for $12 million next year.
Yeah.
And, like that's just absurd. And to give up on youngsters, I know you have a zillion bigs, but one of those bigs is Zach Randolph, who probably shouldn't be there in the first place. So they were weird. Their just situation is absolutely horrid, and I don't really know. Maybe they can redeem themselves by making the trade that I was talking about before. You've opened up that extra cap space to get a picker prospect, but I think as we kind of saw at this trade deadline, maybe teams are charging too much to become a salary dumping ground, since we didn't really see anything like that.
I think the landscape has changed in that regard. I think teams realize now that it's much harder to do that. The outlook on how you take on money and what dead money is worth and what a first is worth now is different. I think that window may be shut for what the Kings and, you know, story of their lives, tough timing for the Kings. They're behind the curve.
And then they're not going to have their 2013. Wow. They're not going to have their 2019 first round pick either.
Yeah. Which is brutal.
This could be something that if they turn that cap space, use it to really get an asset that maybe we can look back, not fondly, but just not be as hard on. The whole getting rid of two guys who were drafted in the first round within the last 2 years, though, for nothing, is incredibly reckless. That's probably putting it kindly too.
Yeah, you want to talk about Jay Crowder. What do you have on Jay Crowder before we move on?
This is why I'm hopeful for Jay Crowder. The previous two seasons, not this one, these are the wings that matched his points, rebounds, assists, and three-point percentage per 36 minutes in the previous two seasons. Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and Paul George. That's it.
There you go.
To have that, like, that player has to be in there somewhere. Maybe he's slower because he's 27. A lot of people said he might be out of shape or didn't train properly for the season because I believe he lost his mother before the year. I don't really want to speculate on that, but maybe just a change of scenery. And you know what? The minutes in the rotations in Cleveland, Tyronn Lue is just not good at them. I just don't. his playing time wasn't guaranteed. He would go, you know, one night he's playing barely, he doesn't play 19 minutes against the Toronto Raptors, and then like three games later he's at 30 plus against the Spurs. And then the very next game, he's down to 16 against the Pacers. It just doesn't make any sense. And maybe with some more freedom in Utah, or just more consistency, and just in a role that better suits him. You know what? The big deal with Cleveland is that they didn't have that really second shot creator. That's not Dwayne Wade anymore. And if he's a shot creator, like, he's taking shots away from people that need to be shooting them. Now you have Donovan Mitchell. Ricky Rubio loves to pass. We at least know that. You know, maybe that helps. And you have Alec Burks was playing well at some point. So you do have just like some of these other additional shot creators, more so than Cleveland had at the time. And even Joe Ingles, you can throw in there. So I think that that's going to help. But I'm just not, especially at his price point, I think that this was a borderline coup for the Jazz because Joe Johnson wanted out and he's not suited for them. Like I'm kind of hoping he ends up in Golden State or Miami.
He's not good anymore. Everyone's talking about Johnson as a buyout guy. And like, I get it. He's the veteran that can play some four, but he's really a wing. He's not good. He's not good anymore. I saw the Warriors linked to him too. Just, I think less so linked and more so like, well, it's a logical place for him to go. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know if he's got it at all anymore. But I think, you know, what's interesting is there are just some guys that I feel like need to be in a really functional system to be good because they are sort of, you know, they're ancillary scorers. They're guys that need things created for them. They do the little things. They defend. And like, you know, if Crowder had somehow, if the Spurs ever made deals at the deadline and Crowder had gone to the Spurs, everybody would have been like, oh, here we go. They did it again. And I feel like Utah's a little bit that way, where it's like, it's a functional environment. There's a good coach. There's a very unselfish culture. I think Crowder's one of those guys, to your point, that it's a change of scenery that's going to be helpful, because Cleveland was the opposite of that. But it's an especially good one for him because I just think he's a guy that needs to be in a, you know, very professional, well-run system to sort of optimize what he can do. If he can still do it, you know, sometimes guys just get older in a hurry, but I agree. I like that for the Jazz too, especially if they just decided that we're not going to watch Rodney Hood miss 40 games a year.
That's the other, Rodney Hood's health bill is something to also consider.
Yeah.
And with Donovan Mitchell, he becomes a little bit redundant. Like, whether you think Alec Burks has his own health issues and he's just randomly good sometimes, he becomes a little redundant with Donovan Mitchell. And if the Jazz still have faith in Dante Exum, who's also slated for restricted free agency, they know that they're going to be able to keep him on the cheap. And if you're getting Crowder, like, think about how many people that Crowder functionally replaces on this roster. He can play what Joe Johnson was playing. He can play more minutes than Joe Johnson and eat into the minutes you lost with Rodney Hood. He doesn't give you the same off-the-bounce shot creation, but in theory, he should be able to guard even bigger wings than Rodney Hood did as well. And like, so right there. And then on top of that, I found it weird, maybe not weird, but I wonder what they're going to do with Derek Favors because he seems like he's good as gone this summer. But again, the market for big men is weird, so maybe he won't be. If he leaves, like, Jay Crowder is just your everyday four, and it's easy to do that. So he really helps them replace three guys, and I loved that deal for them. Were you surprised they didn't move Derek Favors, though?
It's weird. So here's the thing about Favors is I was all about them. I thought they should have moved him. You know, it just made sense because you've invested in Gobert It's the league is not a too big league anymore. So Favors was a luxury. And then Gobert kind of kept getting hurt this year, and I kind of talked myself into, well, you know, maybe it's more of a necessity to have a guy who can capably play some center and help you on both ends, which Favors could do, especially if now the Jazz are hot and maybe they want to make a playoff run. But then you add to that that guys just aren't – I just don't know if guys like Favors are going to get paid on the market.
Right.
I don't know what his market value is. I suspect that it is – he's going to take a pay cut. And I think if the Jazz could get him back for the mid-level, or I don't know. I just think I'm less surprised now because of the way the market's changed and the way that his value to the Jazz, I think, has increased just because, you know, Gobert looks awesome right now, but, you know, you don't want your seven-footers having knee injuries all the time. And certainly Favors has been not so durable himself, but I'm less surprised than I would have been like a month ago. Because I can see the logic of Utah keeping him and thinking they might be able to retain him at a discount, just because I don't know what a guy like him commands anymore. I don't think the market is really there for a guy like him.
It'll be interesting to see how many of these guys and a lot of them bigs, maybe they'll sign one plus ones, or maybe they'll even just straight 2-year deals and try and chance it in 2020 free agency, mm-hmm. or maybe they'll be. More money around. The other thing with the Jazz too is, so we haven't seen a lot of Favors, Gobert, and Mitchell without Rubio, who has just been hot and cold and seesawy for the Jazz all year. When in the 40 minutes, that almost 40 minutes, those three have played together without Rubio on the floor, they have a net rating of 41.1. So like maybe there is something that can work there. They don't play at a particularly fast pace, and that's going to allow him to get back on defense. I don't necessarily like Derek Favors on defense. I haven't been impressed with the way the Jazz defend when he's the center, but if you're going to have Rudy Gobert behind you and Derek Favors is kind of mobile, you can take some chances at the four, and you don't have to, if you give him the, if you want to make him a ceremonial starter and just give him a quick hook to kind of placate his ego, and then you can run a lot of Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert both at the five, and then you have Jay Crowder coming in spending minutes at the four beside the two of them. He needs to, offensively though, even though he's shooting almost 76% at the rim this year, which is just incredible, and also a career high by a mile mostly. If you can, will we ever see range from him? He's taking some threes. He's shooting 43.5% between 16 feet and the 3-point line. That's kind of, like, for him, if he could do that, if he could have that consistent long range shot and attempt it in higher volume, that would open up a lot of things for the Jazz. It's weird because he's a very good player who I think tethers them to this glass ceiling. And Jay Crowder could open up a lot of things that he wouldn't do. I'd want to see the Gobert, Ingles, Jay Crowder, Donovan Mitchell combination and just throw anyone as the fifth guy, but, you know, and preferably not Derek Favors or Ricky Rubio. So the Jazz are in a much better spot. But like you said, the money he's going to command, maybe it allows them to keep him. And maybe it's a short-term deal. Maybe it's even a substantial deal, but it's only for 1 year. He's going to explore the market in 2019 again. And maybe if we see that the market is going to be more aggressive in 2019, all of a sudden expiring contracts take on this new value once again.
Yeah, I like the idea of them just seeing what the market dictates and you know, trying to figure it out. But I know that we've also – so here's – let's do a rundown of what we've done so far. We've spent 80% of this on Memphis and – well, maybe not that much. And then another 20% on Utah. So we need to get a big market team, and I know you want to talk about the Knicks.
Well, I wanted to wrap up the Cavs, and also the Jazz are just a must talk because if my Twitter following is just –
if Andy Bailey's not here, we got to compensate.
Well, yeah, and even just if he is here, I feel like probably 90% of our listeners might be Jazz fans because of him. So that Dwayne Wade trade – between the Cavs and the Heat, seeing Dwayne Wade in different jerseys was weird. I'm almost surprised that the Cavaliers had the guts to go to Dwayne Wade. This is from Ryan Windhorst when he was on ESPN's The Jump today and basically said, hey, like, we have these wings coming and your role's going to change. We're more than happy to keep you here, but did you want to go back to Miami? To know that you're about to trade LeBron James's best friend when he is a few months out from free agency, after all the other shit that you've pulled, when he didn't want to trade Kyrie Irving, when he didn't want to get rid of David Griffin, that was just, did you like? You know, if we're talking tactically, it makes sense because now you don't run into, you know, should we be playing Wade instead of Hood or Kyle Korver? No, you shouldn't. and now you don't have to be in that dilemma. But at the same time, do you think LeBron James is understanding enough to be like just not even think about this?
Who knows? I think first of all, I have immense respect for Wade just prioritizing quality of life at this stage of his career over like an outside shot at a title. Just like, screw it, get me to Miami. I'm going to be a god when I get back there. The ovation is going to be insane when he first plays again. It's 80 degrees every day. But yeah, like this had to have been something LeBron greenlit. Like I think, you know, the Kyrie thing was obviously bad with Jason Lloyd's report about how like LeBron just got told about it after the fact. I think this is a special case. I would be shocked if LeBron didn't like give the thumbs up, or at least be like, hey Dwayne, what do you want to do? And Dwayne's like, I want to go sit on the beach. And he said, cool, have fun.
Gabrielle Union was happy.
Yeah, she was, right? I mean, I don't know. Credit to Wade. I like it. I like him just being like, screw it. Maybe the Heat will stick in the playoff race. Don't care. Want to go where it's warm and where my life is good.
And I mean, with the way Cleveland was going, Miami, they could make some noise in the playoffs maybe. And you kind of need someone like him now with Deion Waiters out. I mean, you shouldn't have Deion Waiters really in the first place, I guess. It'll be interesting to see what happens now. Is he's just there, and he's going to be back there next season?
I don't know. Do you think he's going to play very much, even in Miami?
I have no idea. I mean, this season, maybe, just because you don't have Deion Waiters, and he was – like, if you go back and watch their games earlier in the season, Deion Waiters was Miami's closer. So now maybe you give that role to Wade a little bit.
I don't know, man. I guess I couldn't tell you any of Dwayne Wade's stats right now.
Though?
He seems washed to me. He is washed. He's not. Maybe he'll be rejuvenated, and maybe he's a guy that can just play you spot minutes. But he hasn't defended for like 5 years.
Except for that 18 of where they won 18 of 19 in Cleveland, he was leading these crazy bench units and defending and making shots, and he's still shooting like. You know, he was playing under 24 minutes a game, but he was attempting almost 15 shots per 36 minutes. He was out there, and he was like, yo, screw this. I'm going to get mine, too. So I definitely hear what you're saying, but is he ready to just not play?
I don't know. I mean, it's weird. It just feels like it has such a farewell tour feel to me.
Would he retire after this? He was not going to retire after this season, is he?
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, I'm sure if somebody offered him another contract. I don't know if that's even true because he's kind of gone that route, right? He's kind of like
did the Bulls said,
okay, thing. I did the Bulls thing. He tried to play somewhere else and it didn't go well. It's almost like when a guy signs a 1 day contract to retire with the team he spent all those years with. It just has that feel to me. Like I'm sure he'll play out the year, but after that, who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if this was it, or if he just kind of. Maybe he'll just move into the Udonis Haslam role where he's just like there and he just doesn't ever do anything but stand up off the bench and clap and like be a good locker room guy.
That's possible. My last note on the Cavaliers is why I think the recipe for LeBron James is just surround him with guys who can fire up off the catch and make shots. So when you look at everyone they traded away versus everyone incoming, the six players that they got rid of, are shooting 106 of 364 on catch and shoot threes this year combined. That's 29.1%. The four player, and injuries factor into this because obviously Isaiah Thomas didn't play much, nor did Shumpert, but that's also why trades are valuable because you're getting healthy players, presumably. The other four players that are coming in, and this includes the fact that Larry Nance Jr. just doesn't shoot threes, they are combined 150 of 393 on catch and shoot threes, 38.2%. So we're talking about more than a 9% difference, and those four players, one of which does not shoot threes, has made almost 50 catch and shoot three-pointers more than those other six players combined. That's gonna be a huge help for Cleveland, and because they don't really do anything inventive on offense other than like LeBron go to work. If they can get enough shot creation out of Rodney Hood, where he's just not super erratic, they might be up and running like soon. They might not need too much of an adjustment period. So I just found that a little mind-boggling. Is this is what you're getting rid of for players who, for the most part, like they actually fit. They might shoot even better around LeBron. Jordan Clarkson's a so-so off-ball shooter. But at the same time, 37% on catch and shoot threes alongside LeBron might be 41%.
Yeah, I think my last thought on what Cleveland did, because I mean, really, Cleveland was the whole story of this deadline, is that you know, if you just took the names on paper and you don't assume that, oh, Isaiah Thomas is going to get close to last year's level and Crowder is going to get back right away to what he was 2 years ago. If you just took the names on paper and like what they are right now, in terms of productivity, and your stat is really compelling in that regard, Cleveland improved dramatically. But then if you also sort of factor in this idea that they upended half of a locker room that was just like fraying and coming apart, right? And they got rid of Thomas and they got rid of Derrick Rose, who I just assume is like not the most fun guy to have around in the locker room when he's there.
Get rid of Wade.
Derrick Rose. Yeah. Oh my God. This is so, yeah. If we have to name a loser, it's going to be the Wolves if they sign him. Like they will be the loser of the trade deadline because you just know that it's going to happen, right? But yeah. So anyway, that's the last thing is that Cleveland got better on paper, got better statistically, and like I don't know how you measure the potential improvement of just like getting this locker room like sort of cleaned out of a lot of the guys that I think were responsible for some for the rift. Who knows what that's worth? But I think you know you could. They won the deadline on all fronts, really. I think, and they're screwed going forward, especially if LeBron leaves because of all the money they took on. But that's not what this is about.
Now, this is the actual last thing on Cleveland, and I don't even want – I just want your just quick response to it. What they effectively did, if we go back to the Kyrie Irving trade, is that they turned Channing Frye, Amon Shumpert, and Kyrie Irving into Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, Rodney Hood, Larry Nance Jr., Ante Zizek, and the Brooklyn Nets' 2018 first-round pick. What are you?
Not that bad, right?
I said
not that bad.
That's depending on where that Nets pick falls. It's pretty damn good. And as of right when we're recording this, the Nets are one game back in the loss column of the NBA's worst record. There are a lot of teams that are tanking. So if it's a top five pick, I would say that that's a pretty damn good return, even if LeBron leaves, just because Larry Nance can kind of fit a rebuilding timeline. Maybe Hood can. That pick definitely will. So. Yeah.
Impressive.
That being said, I was a fan of what they got for Kyrie Irving in the first place, in large part because of the Nets pick and Jay Crowder. I'm all about Jay Crowder. But speaking of Derrick Rose going to the Timberwolves, I don't think the Knicks should stretch Joakim Noah, but I kind of want them to just so both Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah can end up with the Timberwolves.
Oh my God. I just, they're never going to, who knows what is going to happen with Joakim Noah, but that's going to happen, right? That Derrick Rose is going to be on the Timberwolves. Like, I don't know who else has any interest in signing him. In the 29 other teams, like, they're going to say hard pass. Like, he's not good anymore. He's a distraction. I don't know if he likes to play basketball. There's no one but Tibbs, right? Who else would possibly go after him? I don't see it.
Do you think, like, Indiana's really feeling themselves, and with the Darren Collison injury, they're like, watch us just rehabilitate Derrick Rose, too?
I don't know. No, I'm going to give you a straight answer. No, I don't think so. I think they'll let Joe Young play all the backup minutes behind Corey Joseph that he wants, and because that's a real person who plays backup minutes now at the point with Collison out for the Pacers. Rose is such a net negative. He's been such a negative for so long.
So bad. It
would take like a personal relationship, which he has with Tibbs, and Tibbs is like just infatuated with his old guys anyway. Obviously, I don't know what the odds are, like, or the percentage chance, but I put it this way. If that happens, if Rose ends up in Minnesota, first of all, it'll be bad because Tyus Jones is really good and he should be playing at least backup minutes behind Teague. And I just won't be surprised. I won't be surprised at all if that's how this plays out.
Someone named Washington, too, is a potential destination. I was like, you know, Washington played that game with Trey Burke, and Derrick Rose is effectively a poor man's Trey Burke at this point, so they're not going to touch it. I agree with you there. The Knicks, I had trouble grading their deal because I couldn't believe that they – so the deal was three-teamer. Dallas Mavericks received Doug McDermott. Denver Nuggets received Devin Harris and a 2018 second-round pick from the Clippers via the Knicks. And then the Knicks received Emmanuel Mudiay, who in 2015 was the seventh overall pick, and a 2018 pick from Portland via Denver. I couldn't believe that the Knicks got a second round pick in this deal because I saw conflicting reports, and I had to confirm because I knew they were sending one out. And when I found out that they did, I was just like, did they do something good?
I don't know. Did they? I like McDermott, but yeah, like no, I think. This is like a Brooklyn move to just get the distressed lottery asset and like hope that he's got whatever made him a lottery asset in there and that he just couldn't develop it where he was, right? I mean, that's the Brooklyn plan. I don't know if Moutier, I guess if I were a Knicks fan, I'd be a little worried that Moutier was going to get in the way of Frankie Smokes. But
you'd be a lot worried about that.
How worried should I? Is that your main concern with this? Is that he's right. duplicative, or he's going to get in the way, or whatever you want to call it?
Yes, absolutely. Because you're already playing Jarrett Jack more than him. Trey Burke cut into his playing time. So even if you don't play Jarrett Jack, which knowing the Knicks, they're going to play Jarrett Jack, you're still divvying up minutes between Burke, Neil Akima, and Moutier. And I don't think the Knicks are creative enough to look at that and say, you know, if we shut down Tim Hardaway Jr., who's still not good despite what people say, the fights I have on Twitter sometimes about people who think Tim Hardaway Jr.'s contract is good value, and part of their argument is that he's missed so much time this year that that's why he's struggling and he's played well when healthy. And I have to explain to them that availability is a skill.
Right.
But if they were the team that would be like, hey, let's shut down Tim Hardaway Jr., we're just going to bench Courtney Lee, who probably should have been traded, Frank Ntilikina has the wingspan to just play him at the 1, 2, and 3. Just get this kid 30-plus minutes a game. And if you can tell me the Knicks are going to do that, which I in no way trust that they will, I think this was a home run of a deal. Because Moutier is shooting over 37% from 3 on limited volume this year. Like, maybe if they can work off one another, maybe. And it's like you said, it's the Brooklyn Nets plan. Like, let's see if we can rehabilitate these guys. And I like Doug McDermott too. I compared him, and I'm curious to see if you're going to agree. I called him a younger Kyle Korver on defense, because this dude just defends his ass off and it never goes anywhere because he doesn't have the physical tools to be good there. Kyle Korver just, he works and works and works, and he's always getting beaten. Like, screens kill him or he falls behind players, but he tries so hard, and that's what watching Doug McDermott is like. And I did like him. But the Knicks had no business investing in his next contract because he's going to be a restricted free agent. So you might as well get Moutier on the rookie scale this season and next and don't have to worry about paying him. That's the other caution, and I didn't really write about it. But now Kristaps Porzingis, we're going to assume that both parties will Jabari Parker the extension. And this might just be a good time to talk about the Porzingis injury in general. If he signs a below-max extension before next season or the deadline, that's a huge red flag to me about his recovery. Like, what does his know that he would jump at the chance to sign that?
Yeah.
Either way, he's going to make more money in 2019, 2020. Emmanuel Moutier, if he pans out, you're going to have to pay him. You'll still have 2 years of Tim Hardaway Jr. I'm vehemently against stretching Joakim Noah just because it's going to cost him $7.6 million for 5 years. And just looking at what the Detroit Pistons go through with Josh Smith at $5.4 million, I'm not about it. So they're going to have to make some really tough decisions, and I don't think that they have the mental wherewithal or the – like that, or at least they haven't shown it to make
just
those
the patience
decisions.
They just don't have the patience. I mean, because the not, you know, just sort of realizing that Noah is a contract, it is one of the rare contracts that can just set you back for like a half a decade. It really is, like, and right. and recovering from that is a really long process, and it sucks that now you've got, I mean, the Porzingis injury sucks for every possible reason, but it sucks that it's going to set back this process that, okay, you know, we know once we're out from under this Noah deal, and if we're smart about other stuff, we're going to have Porzingis really right smack at the beginning of what should be an incredible prime. And now that's a variable. It hurts to say, but like, you just don't know how a guy that big is going to recover from an injury like this. Probably, you know, I don't know. Jabari Parker's done it twice now. He's looked like pretty good to me already. But he's a different type of athlete than Porzingis is. But it's the type of thing that the Knicks have to be incredibly patient, like almost humble, to realize that, like, oh, we screwed it on this one. Like, we, you know, our bad. We got to just kind of take our medicine. And that's just not been their MO forever, you know.
They and the Bulls, just to prove that they're, I would say, two of the four worst run teams in the league, giving out 2016 money in the summer of 2017 is just inexcusable. You look at those Cristiano Felicio deals, like, who's giving Cristiano Felicio 4 years, $32 million? And you got rid of Yoffley or Laverne, or let him walk, and he's playing more for the Spurs, who are on pace to win 50-plus games, than Felicio is playing for the Bulls. Like, it's just – and the Knicks giving Tim Hardaway Jr. that money, and this is the problem. That was the new front office regime, which clearly didn't understand. They had time to monitor the market. Tim Hardaway Jr. wasn't signed right away, and he's a contract that sets you back too because he runs 1 year past Noah, and his contract is never going to be – I don't even think it'll ever be a market value or close to a market value asset where you can just move it. I think it's going to need a sweetener through until at least the final year. But now you have him on the books and through 2020, 2021, if he exercises his player option, what do you do? They're going to be compelled to spend because they're about to reinvest in Porzingis. And that's why this injury is just so damaging. One of the silver linings that a lot of people have talked about is maybe it accelerates his transition to center where he won't have to chase around as many fours. Mm-hmm. And that's fantastic because he should have been playing most of his minutes at center to begin with. At the same time, as Jared Dubin pointed out over at the Step Back, he's had so many left side injuries that the Knicks definitely need to address, like, is he compensating somewhere? Because the left side of his body has just been absolutely worked.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just one last thing on the Hardaway deal, because it is almost as bad as Noah, because at least Hardaway plays sometimes, and he's, you know, I don't know what you'd want to categorize him as, average to below average on some nights. But like, look at how badly they misjudged the market, because just take it back to Rodney Hood. The Jazz moved him partly because they maybe didn't think they wanted to spend $10 million. I mean, maybe they didn't want to spend 10, 12. You said 15. I think I'd be surprised if Hood was going to get 15 a year. And here are the Knicks stuck paying whatever it is, 4 for 71. Is that what it is for Hardaway? Like, how do you misjudge a market so badly? I mean, wings are two way wings is one thing and with size. But Hardaway's really not even that. It's going to be tough. I don't see a silver lining other than the idea that maybe Porzingis is just going to be a five now. But, you know,
the tanking thing isn't even a silver lining either, because you look at it this way and say they're five games off in the loss column of the worst record in the NBA. And just looking at the sheer amount of teams that will probably actively tank.
Oh, yeah.
The Bulls are behind them, the Grizzlies, the Magic, the Suns, the Kings, the Mavericks, and the Hawks. The Nets are also behind them, but they'll try and win games, and they didn't blow it up at the deadline, so maybe they'll. But they've also regressed lately, too. The Knicks, they'll be lucky at this point to end up with a top seven pick still.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a timing thing. They've gotten the timing wrong on everything. They won too many games early in the year, and now it's probably too late, because there are teams. I mean, imagine, just wait. We're not that far away from, like, so-and-so sitting, you know, like Eric Bledsoeing, like for the Suns down the stretch last year, of just, man, he doesn't play now. He's not a basketball player for us anymore. He just kind of sits there.
Other stuff that happened at the deadline. Now we're kind of on to like the smaller scale moves. What did you think of what the Pistons did? They gave up Bryce Johnson, a second rounder for James Ennis, and they also, which I was a little bit puzzled by, gave up Willie Reed,
I
don't really have respect for guys who've hit their wives, and a 2022 second round pick for Jameer Nelson, and a 2022 second round pick with Chicago. I was really tough on them in that grading that trade. I don't know what, like, necessarily the logic was of, I understand the Bulls are bad now, but even if they're not good at rebuilding, they should be better in 2022. And in 2022, you're going to be coming off a season in which you just gave 32-year-old Blake Griffin $39 million, assuming he picks up his player option, which he will. There's a chance you'll be worse than the Bulls, because Andre Drummond's contract will have been up, Jackson's will have been up. This won't be the same core. And given Griffin's injury history, I know it's a second-round pick, but like, these picks matter. If that ends up in the early 30s, that matters. And you're a team that, if you do keep this core together, you're going to be basically living near or in the tax. And Nelson doesn't, I understand it reunites him with Stan Van Gundy, and this probably says a lot about how they feel about Dwight Bikes and even Langston Galloway, who's just been in and out of the doghouse this year, which is weird. They needed backup bigs, and to give away Willie Reed, who's at least like the shot swatter that...
Yeah, he'll catch a lob.
Yeah, and you don't have John Lohr for the rest of the year. Do you believe Eric Moreland's the answer? Because Eric Moreland's not the answer. Maybe Henry Ellison, you can get some time from him. you could put Anthony Tolliver playing with one of Andre Drummond or Blake Griffin at the five. So there's stuff you can do, but point guard, even with Reggie Jackson out, wasn't really your biggest need unless you're just so flat out against Bikes and Galloway at this point as the primary backups to Ish Smith.
No, it's a very it's like sort of a Tom Thibodeau move in that, you know, he just has guys that he trusts and that he likes as backup point guards. And you know Stan Van Gundy trusts Jameer Nelson. It's just a nothing move. And I guess to your point, it's not a nothing move because of the opportunity cost, where if you're going to make a move or make a deal, you want to start bolstering areas of weakness as opposed to just adding a fourth mediocre point guard to your roster. I don't understand that one from Detroit's perspective, which is weird because they made one of the quietly best moves, I thought, getting James Ennis. I feel like Ennis is kind of you remember how the Gary Harris extension was like, everyone said, oh, this is a litmus test for how closely you follow the NBA if you realize how great Gary Harris is and this is a fair deal. I feel like Ennis is kind of that way. Like, if you're a real nerd and you're into the league, you think he's awesome. And I guess we are both guilty of that. He's a prototypical, like, big wing that is athletic and defends and just doesn't do anything but shoot threes, basic, that are created for him. And to get him and add him to a rotation that really needed bodies on the wing, because you don't have Tobias Harris anymore, even though he's kind of a four. You don't have Avery Bradley. And to get him for Bryce Johnson in a second is... I don't know how you get a quality wing for that. I don't understand.
I was surprised the Grizzlies, we touched on, I was surprised they sold so low on him.
How is there not more out there for him? I mean, like,
The Wizards must have really not wanted to make a deal at the deadline aside from, you know, their mini salary dump to lessen their luxury tax bill. Because, like, that's a trade that they could have met. Like, you could have given them Jason Smith and maybe 2 seconds or something and gotten James Ennis then.
Yeah, I mean, why aren't the Cavs in on this? Why aren't the Warriors in on this? I mean, he's just like one of those guys that I think could fit almost anywhere because defense and threes play. It doesn't matter what your system is. It's weird to me. But you know, good for the Pistons. I think you'd call them a deadline winner just based on that because the Nelson move wasn't as bad as this one was good.
Yeah, for sure. I gave them an A, and you alluded to a shot profile. More than 75% of his looks come inside 3 feet or from beyond the arc, and nearly three quarters of his made shots come off assists. So this is just going to work. And here's two things to consider, too, is because he can guard some bigger wings, you're all of a sudden, if you re-sign him, you have his early bird rights, which is going to be big. He'll probably, people keep saying that Avery Bradley is going to make between 15 and 20 million this year. I'll be shocked if he gets 10. You know, he's probably not looking at a pay cut because I do think he's good on the right team, but he definitely was. It's become clear that everyone who leaves Boston was overrated because Brad Stevens is a magician. You're going to get him for less than it would have cost Avery Bradley, and he might be more valuable to you. And this sounds weird to say, he's probably more valuable to you than Stanley Johnson, who's about to get expensive after next year. They'll probably
move good on point. Him.
So
good point.
That as far as Detroit really not planning for its future, this was kind of like a nice hedge for both the present and the future. Keep going.
I was gonna say if we're gonna count all of Detroit's trades, which it would include the Griffin one, then they did not win the deadline. For my money, I just thought that was horrible. They've just consigned themselves to one of what I think is going to be one of the worst contracts in the league. But that's an interesting point on Bradley versus Ennis. If you're talking about a guy that just is going to fit wherever you need him to fit, I might almost rather have Ennis, like, just throw money out. Certainly for the money it's going to cost. But if you're just taking player versus player, I don't know. It's kind of close for me, which is crazy because Bradley is so much more highly regarded.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And I didn't like the Blake Griffin trade either, even though the Pistons have been outscoring opponents by a zillion points per 100 possessions with him and Drummond on the floor. The honeymoon will end at some point. And it's like you said, I don't think that's going to be one of the worst contracts in the NBA. I think that is quite clearly one of the worst contracts in the NBA. And you treated it like it's not just a market level contract, but like it's a good one. And I understand when Griffin's on, I think we can pretty easily say he's a top 20 player in the NBA. With reasonable confidence. I just don't know how much longer that's going to last. And I feel like we neglect the fact, and even like I do this, he's so good. He's battling against an NBA that is threatening to leave him behind. Yes, he shoots threes now, but his jump shot takes him like 80 seconds to get off. And how right. do you do that? Like, and yes, he can. He was running pick and rolls in Los Angeles. His efficiency also plummeted as a result. Yes, he can do some face up stuff, but his efficiency all the time isn't going to be great on that. And to not have a quick release and to not really be able to switch on defense, that's not a contract that's going at in the best circumstances. That's just not going to age well. And will there be a point where we're already at a point where we're playing dual bigs, unless it's Cousins, Anthony Davis? Like, that has to be, like, that one, we don't even know necessarily if it's championship caliber, but you have both bigs who can shoot threes and do some face-up stuff. Cousins can't really switch, but he's a good defender when he's engaged, and Anthony Davis is just a monster. I love him. Like, that's the, if you're going to run two bigs, like, that's the standard more so than what the Pistons did. And to take on that contract, Stan Van Gundy was clearly trying to save his job. We'll see how it works out, but I thought that trade was awful, and it will reveal itself to be awful in due time. And now that I said that, they'll probably have like a perennial 50 win streak.
Well, that's what they want, is perennial 50 win seasons. Like, that is their ceiling, I think. That's all the Pistons. The Pistons are in a weird spot. They got the new arena that nobody goes to. Van Gundy, like you said, was trying to preserve a job, trying to preserve the very concept of the coach, executive thing anymore, because it's clear that just isn't the way to go. Yeah, that's not going to work. What else you got? You want to hit another trade?
Oh, yeah. So I'm not even going to tell you what trade this is. I'm going to preface it with a question.
I like it.
There are three players in the league who are averaging at least 15 points and 7 assists per 36 minutes while shooting 37% or better from beyond the arc. Two of them are Kyle Lowry and James Harden. Who is the other one?
Is this really going to be Elfrid Payton? Is that who it's going to be?
Hell fucking yeah, it's Elfrid Payton.
The shooting, come on, man. Like, so here's the thing. I only got that right because I came across recently that he was shooting that well, and I was just dumbfounded because I never thought he was going to be someone that knocked down even open catch and shoot looks. But here's why Elfrid Payton is bad. He is one of the most damaging defenders in the league. He is terrible defensively. And like we all talk about, we want our wings to defend and you got to have a rim protector. And I suppose if you're ordering the importance of defensive performance, it's the big guy, it's your wings, and then point of attack. But if you're so bad as a point of attack defender as Payton is, it's really damaging. So I just think the stats and stuff are like impressive, because I don't think I wasn't sold he was ever going to be a productive offensive player just because of the shooting. But let's not get too crazy about what he's really going to be. That said, I kind of like it for the Suns, because you take a flyer on this. It's the same idea. Take a flyer on a lottery talent and see if like you're the place that he figures it out, I think is the way to approach it.
It all comes back to they gave up nothing for him and they needed a point guard flyer. And the Magic's offense statistically has been good when he's on the floor, and that's impressive in itself. He's an awful defender, like you said. I mean, that stat to me was just incredible, which is why I relate it. I'm not a believer in his shooting. It's coming on 1.9 three-point attempts per 36 minutes, which is actually fewer three-point attempts per 36 minutes than he attempted last year. And he's still a bad free-throw shooter, which is why that it just rings hollow. Maybe he's someone, though, who now at least you can count on him when that three-pointer is assisted, that he can, 88% of his three-point field goals like come off of assists. Like maybe you could just count on him that way, which is fine. It comes back to what he'll cost you in restricted free agency. If he's gonna, maybe he signs his qualifying offer, or maybe you get him for like $5 or $7 million a year. Like that's fine. Even if he ends up being a backup point guard, Joseph makes that money. So
yeah,
that's fine. And I thought the trade was a home run, but it was another just instance of, I guess you can say the Magic sold low, because part of me said that if this is all you were going to get for him, why not just wait and see what the market develops, and maybe you could re-sign him for cheap and move him for a little bit more later. At the same time, that's a hell of a risk to take for a front office regime that didn't pick him and clearly didn't want him as their point guard.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a similar situation with Hood, except for the changing of the guard in the front office. And when that happens, I feel like all bets are kind of off. I feel like new regimes kind of want to wash off as many of the old regime's moves as they can, especially if there's sort of questions about the player's fit long term, which there certainly were with Peyton. But it's like it's really interesting to me that the way that nobody has cap space, and these, it would have been unthinkable for Hood or Peyton to have been traded for so little last year, even as recently as last year. And it's just different now. And I think credit the Suns for being really opportunistic. They need a point guard. And as long as they don't think Peyton is going to be their starter for the next 5 years on a new deal or whatever, then this is a good deal. But it's just kind of stunning to me that you can, if you find the right guy, get someone who was really, highly regarded not that long ago, that is still young, and just kind of see what happens. The cost of just playing the game and like taking a flyer on a guy seems to have diminished, which is kind of interesting. Maybe if we need to be critical of some other teams, some other young teams that had room and had playing time available, that they didn't, we didn't see more of this type of trade.
I'm totally with you there. Do you know what my favorite trade was? I don't know if it was my favorite trade, but it was just like, of course, like they had to get in on the trade deadline and win it.
What?
Masai Ujiri. Bruno Caboclo, like that draft pick ended up being a miss. You weren't going to re-sign him this summer then. So you not only did you shave $1 million about off this year's bottom line, which is flexibility under the luxury tax that'll help you on the buyout market, but assuming they keep Malachi Richardson, you just got someone who was drafted, I think is 22 overall, and has two more years left on his rookie scale deal. And he's a wing, which the NBA wants. Like that's, to me, that's the little stuff is like just super impressive. And we're seeing in Toronto, more so than anywhere else right now, the importance of just unearthing depth. And like, what if you could, what if Norman Powell gets injured again and you're going to need a body and he kind of shows out? Because Norman Powell hasn't exactly been great this year. I was just like, of course. And now you know what the Raptors are probably going to like make. Even if they end up having like get rid of him, they're going to end up making like a splash in the buyout market. I was just like, of course, Masai Ujiri did that.
You know how you pull off a deal that good?
Oh, I know. You broke her with the Kings, yeah. the last deal I want to talk about before really quickly getting to like teams that kind of just missed by not doing any deals or like the right thing, the Hornets and Willie Hernan Gomez. I thought, and I guess this steps on the Knicks, I wasn't a fan of the deal from the Knicks' standpoint. I think they got good value off of Hernan Gomez for what they did to his actual value by not playing him. But the reason they got 2 second-round picks essentially because they waived Johnny O'Brien and their post-Kemba Walker free agency second-round picks, which could end up being super valuable, and they're unprotected. Yeah. My whole thing is the reason you get those picks is to potentially draft a player who's worthy of experimenting with in the rotation, like Willie Hernan Gomez.
Well, even more than that, he's a guy that you experimented with, and he's not a perfect player, but boy, he had a lot of success in his time last year. I don't know if you're going to recoup that, and it doesn't make any sense because the Knicks are not a good team, and he is someone that should have been playing a ton. So it's hard to justify that. From the Knicks' perspective, that's like a longer term issue. Like you said, like they got a good value for what his value had become, but his value never should have been what it was, 3 days ago when they traded him.
And even justifying it as if Porzingis is going to move to center, that Hernan Gomez becomes redundant, it's okay to have a backup center, particularly when he's going to make about $3.2 million over the next 2 years. And you could have tested him out while he was gone, while Porzingis was injured. So that was it. But for the Hornets, I was just like, I didn't necessarily understand it at all, especially with those post-Kemba picks included. I get he's cost-controlled, and they'll be up against the tax if they re-sign Kemba, and they don't really like Frank Kaminsky. Dwight Howard comes off the books after next year, and blah, 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 blah. And Steve Clifford can run with two bigs, but if it was them, like, doing what the Pistons did with James Ennis, hey, let's just get an asset, or the Phoenix Suns with Elfrid Payton, let's just get an asset for basically nothing, you gave up value for Willie Hernan Gomez to be your third string center?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a different the Hornets and Knicks aren't really all that far apart in terms of the standings, but they're very far apart in terms of like where they. Well, how do I want to say this? The Hornets think that they ought to be a 50-win team right now. And the Knicks kind of might think that, but their personnel doesn't and their payroll doesn't really suggest that that's where they are. So it seems like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like the Hornets have the kind of use for him that the Knicks did. I don't know. This is a deal that shouldn't have happened. I guess if Hernan Gomez wants out, then what are you going to do other than play him more earlier so he doesn't want out? But it's a strange deal that like you kind of feel like if both teams had sort of handled things better leading up to it, it just wouldn't have happened.
Now, sort of the quick hitter stuff, but I'm going to stay with the Hornets on it. Do you view them as not trading Kemba Walker as a failure?
Well, I think I have to, because I had advocated for it like any time that I was writing anything of trades that ought to happen or what the Hornets should do. I mean, you know the situation. He's on an incredible deal. And the Hornets are not very good, and they're committed to a ton of less incredible deals for a very long time. And he's potentially going to leave in free agency the year, not next summer, but the one after, right? So like
2019, yeah.
Yeah. So, your leverage is like just, it's running out of the bottom of the cup. Like as we speak, you're just losing leverage every second that goes by that he's still on the team. If you're going to revamp this roster, you have to give up something good to get a team to take your bad money. And even if you don't subscribe to that logic, you've got to make sure you don't lose this guy for nothing. So I guess, you know, failure is tough, but yeah, I think they should have traded him or at least really not taken such a hard line of, oh, we need an all-star back.
And what you said is what does it for me is I would be terrified, especially in the market we just saw unfold at the end of the trade deadline, to trade a star, but they were in this unique situation where they need to get off money more than they need assets back. And I do firmly believe that they could have gotten someone to eat Nicholas Batum and the 4 years, $99.1 million he has left, including this season on his deal, if they traded Kemba Walker. And that's huge for you in itself because you don't have, now they're stuck in this spot. There are other surrounding pieces. I don't think you can trade basically any of them on their own for even someone or something that might maybe possibly, if you're lucky, turn into an asset. And then a lot of those deals, maybe Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, maybe Marvin Williams, definitely Batum's, certainly Howard, you would have to attach a sweetener to at this point. So Kemba Walker was your ticket to clearer books that would allow you to begin to start a rebuild. And if you only got a lower-end prospect or a lower-end first-rounder as a result, the key should have been financial relief, and I'm sure you could have talked some teams into taking on both Batum and Kidd-Gilchrist and Kemba in like some massive deal. I firmly believe that the Cavs might have done something like that and built it around their like huge salaries. And then even if you have to take on like a guy like J.R. Smith, his salary is not guaranteed in the final year of his deal, and then you get to suck, and your draft pick value includes, even if it's not this year because of all the tankers, but next year, even as the lottery odds change, like there will still be value in sucking. And that kind of leads me to a macro issue of, I don't want to hear that teams like Memphis and Charlotte can't tank. Like you can tank, you can be bad because you're not doing yourself any favor by giving Kemba Walker a near-max contract in 2019 so that when he's 30-something, fans are going to stop coming to your games because you've overpaid this guy who can't even lead you within striking distance of a playoff berth. And that's not a shot at Kemba. I just don't want – he's going to be 29 when he's in free agency. You don't want a part of that next contract in theory. The NBA is topsy-turvy the same way that most other industries are too. You get paid. There's a point where you're past your peak, but because you have so much experience, you're being paid for what you've already done, not what you're going to do. And it's upside down. That's going to happen with players. It's happened with Blake Griffin, basically. It's going to happen with LeBron at some point, probably. So they needed to move him, and they were in a unique position where they could have moved him in this market because what they really needed, they could have gotten, and that was salary cap relief.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, the peak value of Kemba Walker is now, and were the last couple of years when he was playing at an all-star level for $12 million a year. It is never going to get better than that. Even if his improbably, if he became more productive on his next deal, it's not going to be as great a value because he's just going to make a ton more money. So the Hornets sort of missed the window, because if you're going to construct a real winner, a lot of, like, say, the Warriors with Curry, when Curry was on the best contract in the league, you strike, and you, I mean, I guess maybe that's what they tried to do. That's why they spent so much, is they were trying to build a winner. But, you know, you missed. Now you have to just extract the last bit of value out of a guy who's been really valuable for you, just at the wrong time, I guess, because of the rest of your roster, and just get something so you can, you know, find the next guy that's going to do that. Otherwise, the Hornets are just stuck. It's hard to think of another team that is kind of staring down the barrel of sub-mediocrity for a really long time than them. And you know, it seems really clear just based on their actions and the way Michael Jordan has talked, is like, that's what they're into. They're not, they just, you know, you say, you hate it when teams say they can't tank, and I do too, but I think the Hornets are 100% that way. They just, this decision not to move Walker says to me that we are very much committed to trying to win like 44 games for the foreseeable future.
100% right there with you. The other team, the Boston Celtics, them not making a move, was it a surprise to you? Was it a failure? Were you just a little bit disappointed? Because I personally want to see them get another self-sufficient scorer to kind of make life easier on Kyrie down the stretch of games, or at least when both Irving and Horford are on the bench.
Yeah, well, I guess I wouldn't say I'm disappointed. It seemed maybe surprised a little bit, because it seemed like the Marcus Smart talk was heating up, and he's another guy that maybe they just don't want to pay his next deal, but realize that the market is changing and his next deal might not be so bad, type of thing. But I think the Celtics, you know, they basically bought Greg Monroe, so they traded for Greg Monroe with nothing, and I think they're going to be a buyout market player, just like several other of the contenders. So I am not that disappointed, I guess, because I think they're probably not done messing with the roster. And Terry Rozier is apparently really, really, really good, because he was incredible for that stretch after Kyrie first went down, and maybe that was enough for them.
Yeah, maybe the buyout, if they can get like even a quasi shot maker on the buyout market, that would help them. If Terry Rozier is going to turn into kind of that shot creator like he did for that stretch, that helps them too. Do you know who I think they kind of missed the boat on, especially after watching how the trade deadline unfolded?
Who's that?
Rodney Hood. Like, why couldn't... Do you think the Jazz would have done Yabusele in a first-round pick? Or was that deal for them just, we really want Jay Crowder?
I don't know. I mean, I think anyone would have taken a first if they could get it, don't you?
Right, and the Celtics' first is going to end up being 25th at best.
Sure.
So, yeah. And to me, what's interesting is I actually didn't want to see them move Smart. I think they need to get another guy like Hood, where you had his bird rights, he was a restricted free agent, where you can sign him to market-level money or decent money so that you have salary fodder to make trades in the future. And I'm not saying that Anthony Davis or Giannis or Kawhi Leonard is definitely going to end up in Boston, but I keep coming back to this. If you were the Celtics and wanted to make a blockbuster deal next year, or if it was even this year, Jason Tatum's your second highest, your fourth highest paid player. And you're not going to move Gordon Hayward. You're not going to move Kyrie Irving. Al Horford, maybe you're willing to move, but teams aren't going to want someone who's over 30 making max money should they be selling off a star because they're rebuilding. And if you can keep Al Horford, you better damn well keep Al Horford. You have to combine so many of your assets right now to almost the point where if you wanted someone like Davis, you basically have to overpay. And Smart will be valuable to them. Maybe he's willing to accept a short-term deal that pays him a lot of money so he could be that useful salary matching fodder. But Hood would have just fit a need based on their roster and how they kind of – they're not desperate, I guess, for another shot creator. But he was the type of player that they needed. He's someone who you could talk yourself into running bench units on his own so that you can rest both Horford and Irving. Yes, there's value in staggering them because the Celtics, when you look at the numbers, they've been really good when Al Horford plays without Kyrie. But there's also the point of having two of your best players on the roster so that you can play them together. And I thought that maybe they could have come in and offered that. But as you touched on at the beginning and many times, maybe the first-round pick just wasn't there. Maybe the Jazz were just that high on Jay Crowder, because you could also say that, well, a bottom five, a bottom three first rounder is not going to give us what Jay Crowder might possibly give us over these next 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you are right. I mean, obviously, the Celtics offense over the last month or two, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's been bad. They really have struggled to score. And so they do need somebody else. But you know what? Like, I really think that they are positioning themselves to be at the absolute top of the buyout market. I think, and teams are, guys are going to want to go there because of Stevens, because of the title shot potentially. So I think that, you know, they may address it that way. And in fact, I think they probably will. I'm not sure that they would have, I just can't get over the first. I'm not sure that, but it's interesting to me that a team like Boston, or it's anyone that's got it, like, you know, really big goals in terms of free agent acquisitions down the line, almost needs to like overpay a guy on a short-term deal just to have the money to make it work without gutting your roster to get an Anthony Davis. That's an interesting dynamic to have to think about if you've got really ambitious roster building plans.
Well, it's not even overpay. It's just, if you can give them what they're worth, especially in this like constrictive market, you need guys. You don't want to have to, and I know this sounds stupid, and I'm not a Celtics homer by any means, but you don't want to have to give up both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum in addition to whatever picks you have to give up in a potential trade for the next top, let's say, 15 or 20 guy that comes on the market. And that, so that's where I'm at. And Marcus Smart now is basically your sole means of that. And who knows, someone might not want him on his contract because he's not a shot creator. He's not that great operating pick and rolls. You probably, Terry Rozier's next contract when he's a restricted free agent in 2019 might be more enticing. Rodney Hood was just someone I thought would have piqued interest in that regard to people. And that's just where I landed with him. And also for what the Celtics needed, just like this kind of perimeter shot creator and maker, can that be addressed on the buyout market? Is Joe Johnson under Brad Stevens like that guy, that extra just like bucket getter that they could throw out there?
I am personally offended on behalf of Marco Bellinelli right now for the way you're talking. I it's tough. I'm talking about the buyout market. Like, it's got a million guys on it that are going to fix everything. But
yeah, LeBron.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You're right. I mean, Hood is definitely someone that probably that's a notch above anyone that they're going to get. But I don't know. I think, not to go too deep into the weeds, but like, if I'm the Pelicans, I am not sympathetic to you having to being worried about giving up Brown and Tatum for Anthony Davis. Like, in fact, I'm insisting on it, and I want way more than that, you know? So you got to think about it from the other side too. It's definitely interesting to think about getting the money right, but I just want, I'm going to ask for the moon. So,
sure.
Congratulations if you've got a good wing that can score on a short-term big money deal, but I want all your picks and I want all your rookie contract, first rounder guys.
So maybe you still need to give all that up, but if you have the Hood deal, because you don't want to have to involve a third team to get rid of Al Horford, and you also don't want to have to get rid of Al Horford. I'm a firm believer in that. So I think that's where there's value. To wrap this up, I'm going to loop the final three teams, and I want to know, are you more disappointed that the Philadelphia 76ers didn't do jack shit? Are you more disappointed that the Clippers didn't hold a fire sale by at least trading DeAndre Jordan, or maybe even just getting rid of Avery Bradley? Or are you more disappointed that the Thunder didn't really address, like, the Andre Roberson absence?
Well, let's see. I guess I'm not that disappointed in the Clippers. I'll go kind of reverse order. The Clippers, re-signing Williams for what ultimately is going to be less than the mid-level exception, fine. DeAndre, I think they may be able to keep for cheaper.
It's going to be funny when he makes less than Jan Mahinmi next year.
Right? So that's the thing. So I'm not disappointed in that necessarily, although I was agitating for them to trade him all year and then change my mind after the market kind of bore out and they got off the Griffin deal. So that's fine. The Sixers thing, Tyreke Evans made some sense, but I get why they just weren't enamored enough to do that. I guess it's the Thunder, because, clearly, it's easy to say that, them smoking the Warriors notwithstanding, they lost four in a row before that, and their defense had just fallen off a cliff without Roberson. So clearly they need somebody for that spot. I don't know, and they tend to be active, so I guess it's also surprising that the Thunder didn't do anything. I guess that's probably it. I think I would have liked to see them shore up the two guard, because I don't think Alex Abrines is the answer, and I think they really like Ferguson, but he's just not experienced enough to hold down that spot. So they needed somebody else. Maybe that's a Bellinelli destination, maybe that's a Joe Johnson I don't know. But yeah, I would have liked to see them do something.
I really wanted Avery Bradley to end up there if they could make it the money work, which was tough because they're paying the tax. But I thought there would have been a workable deal. I don't know. Could you have gotten out of said deal without giving up Ferguson? That probably would have been the problem. But like, would you know, like the Clippers, what was their price set on Avery Bradley? When that Spurs rumor came out that said that Danny Green in a first, I was like, no.
No. You're going to have to give me Avery Bradley in a first if you want Danny Green.
But so like Alex Abrines, Kyle Singler's deal in a 2018 second round pick, I thought for Avery Bradley would have been a fair deal. But that's if you're going to rebuild as the Clippers. I don't know if they're there yet, and I'm not a fan of teams kind of treading water at mediocrity, but the Clippers might be able to do it without looking absolutely ridiculous on paper because they already have Lou Williams on good money, I would say, because that third year is only partially guaranteed right now. Yep. Avery Bradley's not going to get what people think Avery Bradley's going to get. His agent must be leaking this stuff all over the place. Avery Bradley's not getting $15 million. Avery Bradley might have gotten $15 million in 2016. And then even DeAndre Jordan. So this is hard for me. I'm wondering if he should just opt in, make $24.1 million, and then go on the market in 2019. There is not – what team is going to offer DeAndre Jordan money this summer? I could talk myself into the Bucks, who won't have money.
Yeah, right.
And the Mavericks aren't going to kick those tires. Like, that's done. That's gone.
Phoenix? I mean, Phoenix would have to do some things, but I think they're one of, like, five teams with cap space. Indiana's got a little bit of space, but nobody has the room.
So Indiana, like with Indiana, oh, you're going to punt on Sabonis and Miles Turner. So that
right, yeah, that's what enables you to have a really good team is those guys being there on reasonable, on, you know, their rookie scale deals.
And Phoenix, okay, maybe you're fine just giving up on Bender and Chris. You still have Tyson Chandler on the books for one more year. They have to realize. I know they want to be players in free agency, which for them, I will say it makes a semblance of sense because Devin Booker is about to sign his extension. And once you get to the point where you have to reinvest in your best player, that's where you need to start picking up some winners on free agency. But it's just outside of that, there's just – I can't talk myself into a single team. I can't do – if the Blazers had money, maybe. They don't have money.
Yeah, I don't see – there's no way Jordan opts in because he wouldn't have hired an agent if that was just how it was going to go. But that's a different thing. Like, that's a will he question. Your question is should he? That's a lot harder, right? Because, I get it. You know, he's getting – this may be the last really big contract he gets depending on how long it is. He might have one more in him. So locking in like a 3 or 4 year deal makes some sense. But like his annual rate I'm going to be fascinated to see what it is because he is the prototypical old school center. Like he is it. I think he's been overrated for a really long time. But he is that guy that has to play the five, that does not space the floor, that just hangs around 2 feet from the basket on both ends. And that's all he does. And he's a good role man, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what he's going to get. Like you're saying you don't think Avery Bradley's going to get, you know, more than 12 or whatever. Like, is Jordan going to get 17, 18? Is that a range that you think someone would pay him? And then that gets back to who? Who's going to do that? It's going to be really interesting to see.
He's going to get Kyle Lowry'd by the Clippers is my prediction. Is that it'll be like a 3-year deal that pays him. It won't be – Kyle Lowry came really close to getting the max. I don't think he will. But I think it'll be a salary that kind of keeps him perhaps is like the top – one of the top 50, top 40 highest paid players. Because you look right now, he's in – he's tied for a top 28 salary, I think. I don't think – I'm not giving DeAndre Jordan $20 million a year for a 4-year deal. If you can set it up where it's non-guaranteed in the third year, maybe you can justify paying him a lot of money. He has no leverage. And then there was the report the other day that said the maximum, I think, that people think Clint Capella is going to get is 18. And if you're going to only pay Clint Capella 18, DeAndre Jordan to me has to be getting less than that. It's not even about – is Clint Capella better? I think he's probably a little bit switchier, but he doesn't have the girth when he's like defending guys in the post. So they could be even, but you're paying for Clint Capella's upside. DeAndre Jordan's upside, like this, that's gone. He's going to turn 30 in July. 30.
Right.
So
yeah, I don't know. Does he do a 1+1? I mean, is that a possibility?
If he believes in the 2019 market, then I would, if his agent has told him like, hey, look, these teams are going to have some of these, they'll have traded, you know, a lot of those 2016 contracts won't be off the books, but they'll be easier to move because they're going to be expiring leading into 2019, 2020. Maybe he does, but I don't, you know, what is Charlotte going to go after him in free agency next year because they found a way to somehow get
money? Oh, God, that is what's going to happen. You just said it. That's totally what's going to happen. I mean, Charlotte is that type of team, right? And if Detroit didn't have Drummond, I mean, that'd be the, you know, something like that. One of those teams that just loves the middle, that's willing to pay to stay in the middle. That, I mean, and there aren't on any, no, none of those have money right now. So I think maybe that's what's going to happen is he's going to, that's the type of team that would do it. You've hit it.
Or would the Lakers just max him out for a year this summer?
Just oh, well, that's another thing. We didn't even talk about the Lakers. Do they spend the money now or do they wait?
Wait, how great of a bluff was that? The Lakers are going to punt on 2019 on 2018 free agency, which is probably a negotiating tactic that the Cavaliers fell for.
If it was a bluff, it was – first, you know, the Lakers have made a lot of good deals since they changed front office management. I think well, you joke about Jordan, but if they do just kind of say, screw it, we don't, you know, we can't get LeBron, maybe we can get Paul George, but they might just run it back and do like a Brook Lopez type of, you know, trade or do another KCP type of deal and just kind of hang out and see if they can accumulate more assets to be a little more palatable for, like, I think what's 2019 got Kawhi and Klay Thompson and somebody else,
halfway, Jimmy Spur, Butler. Klay Thompson.
The next Danny Green. Yeah, I don't know. That'll be interesting. There's a lot to think about with him.
Were you we didn't really talk about them. Were you up? You weren't disappointed that the Warriors didn't make a deal, right?
I just don't. There wasn't anything really for them to
Who
do.
Do you trade too?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd trade Nick Young in a heartbeat if I could. He's got a decent number. I think he makes like 6.3. But you can't trade him because like Kevin Durant and Draymond and a bunch of guys were lobbying them, specifically to sign him. His value is not, well, I don't know what his value is. I think you could have
in this market, unless the Knicks are really high, like, why didn't you offer a second round pick and Nick Young for Kyle O'Quinn, who I think, first of all, fantastic Zaza Pachulia replacement. And it doesn't matter, like, maybe he opts in next year because the big man market is weird. Even if he doesn't, you have his bird rights. He would have been interesting on that team. But I think it came back to the recruitment thing. With Nick Young, you had all those guys recruit him, and then you can't combine a bunch of minimum contracts because some of those guys you actually like. Even if you're done with Caspi, even if you're done with McCall, like, you like David West, you're not going to give him up. And then the other thing was Pachulia, you can't move him because he has that implicit no trade clause, and if he was to waive it, he's not waiving it to play in New York.
Well, and I think, I don't have any information on this, but I really think Pachulia was... You know, I think promises were made to him. That's just total speculation in terms of, like, you're going to start. Don't worry. You'll be our ceremonial starter. And, you know, we can't trade you. But, like, I think his position, it's because, you know, they could improve the starting center spot. He does a lot of things well, but he's just, it doesn't add up that they haven't really explored replacing him, whether just on the roster or in that first unit. But yeah, I don't know. They just didn't. McCall was the guy that, potentially would have had some value, but he's just been so bad. He's going to go down to the G League voluntarily. I don't know if you saw, but he just wants some reps. And I don't know if you saw the first quarter against OKC. I mean, McCaw was trying to guard Russell Westbrook, and it was just like, it was legitimately cruel. He could not, it was just straight line blowbys like several times in a row. Which, you know, McCaw was a guy that, you know, a year ago at this time, everybody was thinking like, man, how are the Warriors going to suppress his value so that he doesn't get a massive offer sheet as a restricted free agent in the, you know, next summer? And he definitely has not lived up to it. That would have been a guy they could have traded, but certainly his value has made that impossible.
Because, you know, he's not going to get money. Remember the whole thing? People thought Ian Clark was going to get mid-level money, and he signed for the minimum. I couldn't
–
when I heard the McCaw stuff, and I liked McCaw leading into the season, but to hear that stuff after what happened with Ian Clark, I was just – of the mind, like, no, I don't think he's gonna, you know, maybe he'll price himself out because someone's willing to give him more than the minimum, but the Warriors, if they're already willing to pay the tax and through the teeth for this roster, I don't think he's gonna be someone who breaks the bank. Of course, if he's not playing well because he's been playing so poorly, you don't want like a poor man's Sean Livingston on your team.
No, well, like, it's hard to imagine, but it wasn't that long ago that there was a only slightly crazy sentiment among Warriors fans that, like, hey, you know, it's okay if Iguodala declines a little bit, because as he kind of slips, McCaw's really going to step right into that role and just be Iguodala. I mean, that was a real thing that I think was like a semi-plausible belief, which obviously has not played out. But yeah, they couldn't. I don't know what they do. I think they'll probably be active on the buyout market too. But I mean, that like we've gone through these guys. There's just not that much out there, and they need a shooter really badly. They need a guy that's going to space the floor off the bench. And I just don't know who that's going to be.
Joe Johnson shooting under 30% from three this year.
Former Warrior Marco Bellinelli, bring him back.
If they could guarantee him playing, I guess you could give him Caspi's playing time a bunch at this point. He hasn't like fallen off. I don't know. The buyout market, but I guess the first inclination would be if you don't care about playing time, the Warriors are just it. Punch your ticket to the NBA Finals and a championship. That feels like a good spot to end. You've been super generous with your time. If you want to follow Grant on Twitter, and you absolutely should, he is at @GT_Hughes. That's again at @GT_HUGHES. He is the NBA national featured columnist at Bleacher Report. He is also a lawyer. He is also a good friend of this podcast and a favorite of this podcast and this specific podcaster. Check out his work. He does the power rankings for Bleacher Report. I'll admit to not reading them every week, but I've read a bunch of them. I would say I would average 3 of every 4 he publishes, and to be able to have that kind of stamina and wit and just insight that often, writing as much as he does about every team, love it. So check him out. He's spectacular. If you want to follow me, I don't know why you would, but I'm at Dan Favale. That's Favale. You can follow Andy at Andrew D. Bailey, spelled as it sounds. Hardwood Knox, you can find at Hardwood Knox. Please follow our sponsor at @NBA_math. Since Andy is not, oh, I'll also remind you, wow, I can't believe I almost forgot this. Please rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. Again, that really helps us out. And we'd love to hear the feedback in the reviews. We like to see those ratings go up. And, you know, subscriptions just mean that you're going to get to hear our voices all the time. You'll get to hear Grant's again, too, because this will not be the last time he's on the podcast. Since Andy's not here, I will get away with only one shout-out, and that is a shout-out to Kyle Anderson. Until next time.